Hey, and welcome back to Apollo City Comics. I'm Brandon Blocksdorf.
And I'm Brandon Moncada.
And I'm Alex Batts.
The Anything and Everything comic book podcast is back yet again for a season of miracles. We're wrapping up volume one of fucking Mr. Miracle. God damn, you know how hard it is to keep up with all these names and shit?
You're a little bit off, but you know.
Yeah, just a hint.
Miracles in the name.
Yeah, miracles. Dude, imagine how much that throws off just like an average reader. You know what I mean? Just an average comic viewer that's just trying to take out Mr. Miracle, Miracle Man, which is the whole controversy. It was supposed to be Marvel Man, but that's even more like convoluted. Like when you talk about like Captain Marvel and who Captain Marvel is and Shazam and the, you know, and all that stuff,
all the Marvel family and all that. Yeah.
As like convoluted as this name Miracle, which is freaking insane. Why did I say freaking? Why is it just fucking insane? Because it's like, not only did you get the Marvels mixed up in all this, but now you're getting like the fourth world Jack Kirby, Mr. Miracle mixed up in all this at the same time. Like this is a trash can of superhero names that just went wrong in super history. Much like the fucking reading order that this has all been and all the printing and editions that Alex has the omnibus that he's peeling through. I have the trades, the hardcover trades, broken up in three volumes, and I also have like the A1, you know, original where some of these stories were put in, and the individual Eclipse issues, and then Brandon over here has the individual Marvel issues when they were re-released, and you would think that we could all put stuff together and figure things out. No, just like we've talked about every episode of our Miracle Man saga, we tried to like get these three bonus stories, these three stories that were just short stories put in anthologies, such as A1, which was an Atomic Press printing back in the day. Look, there's even, are they Quies? Or are they the Warp Smiths? They're the Quies, right?
I think the Warp Smiths.
That's a Warp Smith.
It's a Warp Smith because in Yesterday Gambit, he's called the Warp Smith.
Okay, cool. So this is the Warp Smith. Yeah. And this comic, A1 right here, is fucking insane. If you guys could find, I'm surprised Cartoons Kayfabe hasn't done videos on these yet, because this has a collection of some of the best creators. I have two issues. I have issue one and I have issue 5 out of 6. There's only 6 issues of these. But dude, let me read off some of the credits on this A1, because these three bonus stories we're talking about barely even have Miracle Man in it. In fact, only one of them does. But the contents in this first A1 issue has Barry Windsor Smith, Alan Moore and Gary Leach, Eddie Campbell, John Bolton, I'm trying to name creators that might be familiar, Dave Gibbons, Brian Boland, another Alan Moore story, Bill Sienkiewicz, Neil Gaiman, Dave McKean,
Is Steve Dillon on that list?
No, he isn't on this one, but he is on issue 5 over here.
Okay, there we go.
There's a Steve Dillon story in this one. And this issue 5 one too, again, it opens up with a Neil Gaiman story, which tripped me out like crazy. The second one has Neil Gaiman with Kelly Jones, Peter Milligan, Joe Kubert in it. Cornelius Stone sounds familiar. Bruce Jones and Steve Dillon is the very last one. It's just packed with creators. These A1, I want to try to find the other four at some point. But it's so worth it. And they're black and white books. That's what's so cool about this. So the story that's in this one is actually chapter 3 that we're going to go into that, you know, I'll show to you more then. But it's all in black and white. It's super rad. But so what we're doing is there's a story called A Glimpse Into... it's kind of weird. I don't know where A Glimpse Into the Future comes from, but the story is called The Yesterday's Gambit. Mm-hmm. Do you guys have two titles for this one?
Let me check my table of contents again.
Yeah, let me look at mine.
Because, again, as we were saying, we're having to compare and cross-reference notes and take pictures of the pages. That way we're like, oh, you're starting with this page? Like,
it wasn't even, are you starting on this page? I was like, give me the fucking title of the story. And I was like, I need to know.
Yeah, so mine does say, so, okay. A glimpse, so the Yesterday's Gambit is underneath the section in the omnibus that is the like Legends and Apocrypha and it says a glimpse of the future, and then colon, like, and then the Yesterday's Gambit is like the story title, because like the next one that it has listed is Young Miracle Man, and then 1957 is like that story title.
What? Okay, and that's important and then, too.
To well, add but, more like, confusion to that, I'm reading
that's apparently
on
like
issue...
a Legends, like a separate story thing. So they put it with like the Legends tale. So I guess if that was also like a, because you said it was in volume two. Yeah. Was it also like an in between the main issues like issue that they put out? That's why
the volumes.
Like, yeah, they just like put it in the back end of the hardcover with like the other ones.
Meanwhile, for Marvel's reprints that came out in like 2013? I always forget.
I don't know. Sure.
Yeah. It's issue two of the Marvel reprint, and in the table of contents it goes Warrior 3, When Johnny Comes Marching Home, Warrior number 5, Dragons. And then it goes Warrior number 4, The Yesterday Gambit. And then it does a behind the scenes thing. And then after that, you get Marvel Man number 65, The Birth of Marvel Man. And then after that, you get Marvel Man 102, Introducing Kid Marvel Man. And it's the 1950s stories at the end of that.
Whoa, that's wild. I guess we'll get to that. I have to check my other books for those table contents. So Mine is just listed as A Glimpse into the Future, The Yesterday's Gambits, and then it says The Warp Smiths, Chapters 1 and 2, Cold War, Cold Warrior, and then Chapter 3, Ghost Dance, which is weird that they have Chapter 1 and 2, and
as
then...
one story.
Yeah.
I will say that, in the hardcover, the Warp Smiths have their own section, so it's like the Warp Smiths, and then... the Chapter 1 and 2, Cold War, Cold Warrior, and then Chapter 3, Ghost Dance. Those are just the only two stories in the Warp Smiths like category, and then the Legends and Apocrypha one is after that.
Oh.
And so like it goes like Book 1, you know, to like Dream of Flying, and like all those issues or like chapters, and then Book 2 and Book 3, and then the Warp Smiths, and then Legends and Apocrypha, and then it has Marvels and Miracles, and that's like two more stories.
I guess those are in different volumes for me too, since like the hardcover I have doesn't have.
Yeah,
that
that's
right
like
now.
The Marvel Man story, and then the Invaders from the Future, which is like the original 1956 version of McAnlow and Don Lawrence's Marvel Man classic.
Oh, okay, interesting.
That's like
T'Challa.
This is absolutely ridiculous.
I know it's ridiculous. Well, we'll kickstart it off with the Yesterday's Gambit, and here it's listed as we all know the original writer. Because Alan Moore can't get credit for that. Art, Steve Dillon, Paul Neary, and Alan Davis. I didn't realize Steve Dillon worked on a Marvel Man piece.
I didn't either.
Miracle Man.
But when you look at, when you start looking at the faces, they're all starting to look like Punisher. And,
I can
like,
see that. I can totally
you know what
see
I mean?
Yeah.
Like, Steve Dillon just has a certain style where people kind of look similar. Like, but you could see it.
And this one, released in Warrior number 4, August 1982, between regular installments of Miracle Man's ongoing serial, The Yesterday Gambit leapt forward a telling of story Miracle Man's possible future. And this is pretty cool. It starts off at the very top, complete in the special, a stunning glimpse into the Miracle Man legend. And honestly, like I'm glad this was a side story. This had to be like a first draft for Alan, because it's... I don't know, the caption in this one was just over the top, I feel, like right when we started. And the way you have these three thin panels, maybe I could do a quick glimpse right here while I fight my cat. There's three panels that threw me off right from the beginning. And it's these right here. Because you start up top and then you have to go here to the bottom when your eye naturally wants to cross this way. And so it would feel like these are separate balloons. Getting like these vertical wild balloons you have to stretch down and go up and down for each time, I thought was kind of a nuance and could throw people off.
Well, the other thing that's a little like kind of the other thing that throws you off is the caption boxes are different sizes too. So like,
oh yeah,
it's you naturally want to read it, like to your point, you want to read across, but that's a little jarring because one's fat, one's skinny, one's fat, and then you kind of like go back down and like they're all the same size, but because of the caption boxes they look like they're different sizes. And for some reason the one on the bottom is crooked. I don't know what the point of that is, but
I like the opening of this a lot actually, because I like the dramatic narration. I'm a big fan of love the like over the top drama, and also it's just like I enjoy that like style of writing. But
no
then
wonder you like X-Men.
Oh, yeah, I mean, literally, no, it, like, straight up, like, yeah, I was like, oh, this feels like a Chris Claremont X-Men comic, like, but, so, yeah, like, I dig that. I do agree that at first I did want to go to the, like, next panel immediately, so, like, that is a bit of a problem, but then also I think about pages where, like, there'll be full pages that have just the skinny vertical panels, and, like, they're encompassing, and, like, those work still, and so I don't think it's something that necessarily something inherently like wrong with using that, but for here it did definitely like I wanted to go to the right first.
I think it's the sizing of it that throws it off because they're so thin and small and there's so much packed in there. I think that's what threw me off the most. But I could totally see what you mean by that. 100%.
There's no like right or wrong way of doing it really either.
Oh yeah. I mean,
and this was a Warrior number 4, one of their earliest, you know, books. You know, 1982 we're talking about here. You know what I mean? So, like, how much, you know, your, yeah, like, European experimental stuff was, like, going on to, like, play with things like that. So it's one of those things. You know, this is purely just, like, fun. It literally indie comics of the day that were coming out at this point. I guess Miracle Man is one of the most indie Alan Moore works because it's so underground. In comparison, I feel, to anything else, and it was so early in his career.
Yeah, and I would also say, especially in comparison to, like, just what the average person would know, because, like, Miracle Man is probably what I know arguably the least about from his, like, work. There might be something else, but, like, I mean, you know, I'm familiar with most of the other stuff, I think.
I feel like Miracle Man is, like, the favorite of writers, Alan Moore writer fans, you know what I mean? Because they want to go into that superhero aspect with that deep, dense storytelling and embellishment. I mean, there's plenty of stuff that I'm sure you guys haven't heard of that I can name from Alan Moore, like Fashion Beast and stuff like that were really, like, super quiet, but they were full series, like 4 or 6 issues. But, like, as, like, a popular, like, first emergement, like, I feel like people who do know about Miracle Man are typically, like, writers. It's like a creator book. You go to this book to see how something was warped and shaped and redefined as, like, the Superman you know, tale or epic or power standards and everything. So I, you know, and going into this is weird too, because this part of Miracle Man isn't really about the spectacular, like, we're reinventing the superhero anymore. Now we're bringing the superhero into, like, a super sci-fi, like, taste and feeling. Like, super dense 2000 AD sci-fi taste and feeling that we start getting in these. And this first one is, like, literally, like, a bizarre Doctor Who episode.
I called it. I thought of Christmas Story for some reason, just like the three stories, and
I could totally see that as well.
There's no connection. I will say real quick, when I went to reading this, I tried doing a little research. There's only like one article I could find that really like digs deep talking about it.
Oh, how so?
I like just did a quick Google search. I was like, oh, let me just see if like anybody else has like, you know, some sort of in-depth analysis of the story or whatever. And looking into it, I found one website called sequentialart.org or something. Support. Oh,
yeah. Yeah.
There's like an article kind of review on it, and that's kind of all I could find. Nothing else, really.
Anything in that you could point out or highlight?
Not too much. Just more about it. This wasn't reprinted until, I believe, Marvel printed the reprints.
Yeah, because you know what? None of these are in my single issues. So that means Eclipse didn't reprint them when they obtained any of that either from Warrior.
Yeah, one thing to pick up from this is that basically it's a legendary story because it provides insight into Alan Moore's original vision of where the story would go. That's because the episode is set in what was then the future. In fact, it takes place during the climax of Book 3, Moore's final work with the character. So it's actually kind of like a glimpse into his like epilogue when he was done with the character.
Well, it feels like he, you know, when you kind of get through the story, what ends up happening really quick is that he's like with one of the warp smiths, and I wonder if I could find the panel that explains everything. Cannot contain enemy for long, where to prevail must hurry, blah blah blah, killed him as a course of example. Basically, this device will propel us back along to your time strain. You will encounter yourself as you were, and and you will battle with yourself. My task is to contain the energies released within those energies to destroy the monster. If we fail, my friend, many worlds will fall with us. So basically, the Warp Smith is getting Miracle Man, and he's like, I'm going to send you through different points of your career, of your life so far, so you could fight yourself at different stages of your life so that you could build up like enough, basically like kinetic energy for me to capture, for us to use against this motherfucker because we can't defeat him. And so he starts off by going back to the day that him and Johnny Bates and Young Miracle Man were all blasted by the nuke. Because that was like top tier at the time, Miracle Man at that moment. So he goes back, fights him, goes into battle. He absorbs everything he needs to absorb. And then their memories are wiped. They won't even remember that that fight ever happened. Typical timey-wimey type of stuff, you know? The second time he goes back to encounter is, you know, post-80s. Miracle Man, where he's, you know, regained his powers. He's kind of just like, his body's been refreshed. He's in the body for the first time in like whatever 15-20 years, and they go and battle on the moon, and it's pretty tough. Like, it's like that version of Miracle Man has been stored up for so long that it actually kicks present Miracle Man's ass a good amount, and he ends up needing some backup. And then right when he gets back, that's when we realize who we're fucking fighting at this point. And it's Kid Miracle Man. So you figure this is about, like what you're saying, the end of chapter 3, issue 15, with the bloody... The reason why we're doing this whole thing is to get to issue 15. That big epic battle between Miracle Man and Kid Miracle Man. And literally, that's the whole... That's all four pages, you know?
It gets trippy.
Oh, my bad. What's up?
Sorry. No, I was going to say, it's trippy because it's a side story, but, like, there's so much behind it in the sense that, like, there's two things to really take from it. Like, I took from it after reading that article is that this is, like, a really major story that was, like, kind of, like, the vision of, like, how Alan Moore wanted to go. But also, it was kind of, like, locked away behind not being reprinted for so many years. So if you couldn't get a hold of an old issue, there was no way you could read this, really, you know, at least in, like, standard ways. And then it's just, like... You know, you had to wait till what, 2013, like we said, 2014, to like read the reprint, to read such an important like issue for probably Alan Moore and the character.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm sure like once you're, this is so early in the Miracle Man timeline, I'm sure this is like where he kind of like, it's a good strayaway that this would fit in probably if you read it right before, you know, between issue, somewhere around issue 14, you know, or maybe going into issue 15, this is where that would have slid right in. But it's cool, like, envisioning an ending for something and then having it alter after everything. And I'm still reading that book, that Komoda book, so I want to see why Alan's, like, career kind of stopped on Miracle Man and what he transitioned into to where he had to hand off the book to Neil. And that handoff is really where things kind of get interesting. But at the end of this, like, it looks like it's a pretty messy battle where it's not going to be winnable. And you're kind of left with one of those writer moments where they let you figure out what happens on your own. Because the Warp Smith, I mean, it looks like Miracle Man is almost dead. Like the top, the last page, top two panels, looks like Miracle Man is wiped out and is losing. And this Warp Smith barely has enough time to channel all that energy he just built out and shoot it towards Kid Miracle Man. And all you hear is, and also they're in this super underwater deep, like nobody can reach this. And there's like a building that had formed, you know, under there that they made, not by man, but by like alien Warp Smith stuff. So it can't break under the pressure of the deep sea. And so this deep sea base that they're in and fighting and whatnot, you just see a blast. And then like it channels you through the other timelines that we were just in. And it brings you back at this blast where it's just silence, where like you're just assumed, did they all die? Like you don't even know. And it was just a nice little fun cliffhanger, but it's a good appropriate ending for it. But cool little like, hey, you know, this is an interesting take on the future of what could have happened.
Yeah. Do you have anything you want to add to that, Alex, though, about like what, how you felt with the story?
I just thought it was pretty cool. Like, I mean, I like, it plays into a lot of like the time travel tropes, as you kind of like touched on, where like typical like time shit where they go and mess with stuff and then they're like, oh, like don't worry, they just were wiping their memories.
You're gonna
like,
forget whatever. About
so,
it.
So like it doesn't really matter, like it's fine. But I mean, I also just love, and this is the case I think too for the later stories that we'll get into, but I'm a fan of whenever stories just like throw stuff at you that like they're just like, oh, you're just going to have to run with this. Like, the way that they're explaining stuff, like, the entire way that the Warp Smith is, like, explaining everything. And, like, when him and Miracle Man start going back and forth, and, like, Miracle Man's like, of course I get this. And, like, he explains, I can't remember the exact verbiage, but, like, he explains back the plan. So he's like, oh, of course, the, like, we need the most powerful person, of, and, like, they need to be fighting the other most powerful person, which, like, that could only be me versus me. So, of course, we have to travel back in time and, like, use the power. Like, I just love it when books do that. I don't know. I think it's, like, super entertaining. It can definitely, like, there's a good balance that you have to do whenever you're doing that, because it could very much be, like, too corny or too, like, you can definitely throw too much shit that just makes no sense and just becomes gibberish, like, at the reader. But I think that this book, like, handles that level pretty well. And then, yeah, I mean, I also like the ending. I think that it, like, fits really well for being, like, set so far in the future that it's not going to be, like, it's like, oh, I need to see what happens for that cliffhanger now because, like, you're going to be reading the main story. Anyways, so, yeah, I think it works.
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah. And, I mean, that's the coolest part of all this that we just read. Like, I thought that was the coolest story out of all three that we come across. Because the next one, the Warp Smiths, it doesn't even give me credits. It says Gary Leach illustration promoting the Warp Smith appearance in A1, number 1, 1989. And that cover, that's the cover here. But, I mean, I don't have, I don't know any other dates on that. Do you?
I don't know dates, but I have one more thing about the first story that I forgot. The line, whenever he's like, it began in whispers and, like, ends in silence, and that being the name of the place that they are too, and that narration, I was like,
oh, yeah.
I was like, this is so good.
Oh, the other thing I want to add, though, it's a little cliche, but it's also really cool. He does, like, this classic comic thing where he's playing with, you know, the panel layout. The first page has those three tall, skinny panels on the top left, and then the last page has them on the bottom right. And it's just like a nice, close, you know, it's closure, right? Like, you close the book, and they kind of, like, they're symmetrical in the way they, like, mirror each other. That's pretty cool.
That's a great observation.
I love that shit, too.
Yeah.
That's an awesome observation.
Tickles the comic book funny bone, you know? You're like, and it's, like, the same, like, color, kind of, like, tone with the underground base thing, or underwater.
I mean, it's literally, like it's probably the exact same, like, framing, honestly, as far as the camera zoom on the underwater base. I wouldn't be surprised, you know?
But I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah. Good stuff.
And the second one,
credits for Ghost Dance, Brandon.
Not credits, like dates where stuff was, because this one is just Gary Leach and Alan Moore.
We're doing Ghost Dance.
No,
we're doing Cold War Warrior. Right.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Sorry, okay. That's my bad.
No, it's all good. I don't even have Ghost Dance. Everybody out there. unless I'm tripping, I went through all the books and I was like, "There's no Ghost Dance labeled."
That's so weird because it's like. You know, that would make sense, maybe, too, because mine is reprinted after yours was printed, Brandon, and then Alex's was printed last. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mine's from literally last year. Or
it could be. Yeah. I mean, like I said, I definitely, like, last night, I was reading before bed, and I was like, I'm not tripping. I'm, like, eating dinner, like, looking for this story. Like, what the fuck? So it just wasn't there.
You know, all I could really say about these stories is that, I mean, first one, Cold War, Cold Warrior, is all about, like, you know, people thinking that they're, like, a group of people that are traveling, and they're, like, you know, doing their own fucking thing, and then they get mistaken for, like, someone who's going to attack these Warp Smiths, and the Warp Smiths attack them, and they weren't supposed to attack them, and they injured one and killed another, and then they get to stand trial for that among these, like, epic Jack Kirby-like gods. It was cool. I didn't get the connection to Miracle Man at all.
Also, it's one of those classic Alan Moore things where he has to get some sort of sexual tension in there.
Yeah.
Where he's like, hopefully, so will. How do you pronounce that? Susu?
Something like that. The weird sci-fi names are over the top in this story.
Susu of Planet Karbu.
Yeah, dude, I did not bother, like, remembering or trying to mentally pronounce any of those names. I was like, every time I got to them, I'm just like, letters. Like, I just kept.
This line right here, casual sexual liaison of Coma Chat Crank. Like.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's something I will say. So for this story, I do love, like, the overall themes here that he's playing with, right, which is, like, about, like, not premeditated, preemptive attack, like, whether or not you, like, the line as far as, like, defending yourself or being, like, proactive in that kind of measure and like where that line is ethically and things mm-hmm. like that. Like mm-hmm. I do definitely think that like that's something very much worth exploring in stories and is really great. However, the presentation in the story is not exactly it, because literally half of this dialogue made me want to slam my head into my desk.
all the names.
Yeah. All the names, and then also like the rhyming of straight up, were these completely made up words, right? I know that all words are made up, but like
Hushabye and Crank.
Jocestra doll?
I was like, okay, well, this is tough. Like, it was just tough to read and try to get through. Yeah. And I was like, okay, like, this could
also
be, I like what you're going for here, but the execution is not. The art was like cool, and I always appreciate mm-hmm. crazy sci-fi or fantasy stuff.
Totally,
and, like,
of course.
Again, I like the ideas and stuff that they have going on here, but then I was just like, I don't. And again, I don't know the connection to Miracle Man at all, besides the Warp Smith, I guess.
Yeah,
I guess world building, but you also have a fucking, like, a poor man's version of the Monitor, anti-Monitor right there. Like,
I like the fact that, like, they, at the end, how they're just portrayed as, like, you know, essentially the same as, like, the like, Alan Moore, like, the people writing the story. Like, that's literally how they talk about it. They're like, oh, I loved how you, like, weaved this narrative together to, like, show this, and then, like, this happened, you know? And it's like, okay, well, this is, like, incredibly meta, which is funny, but...
It also doesn't help that it's, like, 10 pages, give or take, so it's just, like, there's so much happening and so little space.
Well, it's weird how this is chapter 1 and 2, and then for me, Ghost Dance starts on page, on the rights page, right? Mm-hmm. And then you turn the page, and then you see the Ghost Dance font on the left page, the title, yeah. So, like, the bleed into chapters 1 and 2 and 3 are kind of blurry. Like, you don't realize that you're starting a new story because there's no definite, like, end. It doesn't say
anything.
Yeah, it's
anything. Just the, like, art change.
Like, colors change. Well, even then, the colors are all purple and everything and blue base, so you're kind of thinking it's part of the same story. But yeah, that shift, that scene change is the only thing that you could pay attention to. Yeah. And, dude, I don't even remember what Ghost Dance was about.
Ghost Dance is just showing how, like, gnarly the Warp Smiths are.
It's like the celestial things kind of in space, right?
Yeah, it's just, like, showing a bunch of different... It's like, oh, here's all the crazy shit that happens in space, like, in this world. And
yeah, I gotta... Which, like, I gotta look at the pictures again, Alex sent me, sorry.
Like, again, I like the storytelling for what it is, and the fact that, like, I'm a big fan of, like, each of these little scenes and, like, snapshots. Like, there's so many stories within there that you could tell. It's like, these are two sentences that he just threw out, like, 8 different concepts that are wild, you know? Which, like, I like that, but also, like, that's not, as a whole, a super compelling story. It's just like, hey, look at all this cool, like, gnarly shit. And I do like the kind of idea that these beings are, you know, and they, like, talk about it at the end. I like the irony that they speak about, like, how they observe the kind of universe and, like, their life. I think that kind of, like, existential irony is definitely interesting, and I liked what they did with that there. There's not really, like, an arc here so much as just, like, a kind of, like, thought piece, and also, like, look at these crazy-ass scenarios and, like, wouldn't this be wild?
I thought of it also as, like, him trying to do an attempt at, like, some sort of romantic story in a way. Or kind of like this, like...
Well, yeah, it's a weird, like, almost religious, like, poly-romance thing that's happening. Because, like, they're all just, like... They apparently, like, mate and then die is what they say. But it definitely sounds like they have, like, group, like, mates is what it seems like.
Yeah, I mean...
And that's what they do.
He also got a nipple slip in there, I guess. So, I mean, he's going for something.
You know,
but yeah, go ahead, Brandon.
As, like, you know, we're all, like, creating, like, our own comics and doing more and more of that type of stuff, I could see the, like, you know, branch out to be like, I'm going to do more to expand this world and tell a short story for this anthology and still build upon stuff, or maybe test an idea you have now, like a single idea, and then kind of move forward to see if it could fruition into something else. Or you just have a small idea and you're like, well, I could turn this into a 4-pager, you know what I mean, and get that, like, out of my system. So I guess, you know, maybe that's Alan's, I can only assume, because, like, it's so fucking far off from anything else that's here that I can't imagine it being anything else for any other reason.
No, but I mean, I like it for, like, what it is on that level. But yeah, they definitely were like a breeze to, well, aside from the dialogue in the previous one. They were pretty,
yeah,
pretty light read.
I think the Yesterday Gambit is probably the best one, like we said earlier. And also, it just has like the most impact and also kind of like satisfying kind of conclusion to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the most like typical story, like,
yeah,
that you'll out of the three for sure.
It's just Miracle Man going to his canon events, you know what I'm saying?
Just yeah, I mean, it's like you said, like, you can definitely, like, you're just one visit short of a Christmas, like, Carol, you know?
Yeah, so, right? Like, it's yeah, just going to Ghost of Christmas Past multiple times.
Yeah. So, yeah, I can definitely see that.
But, dude, Gary Leach's black and whites, dude, I feel like when the painting goes on him sometimes, like, his pencils and inks are so fucking astonishing, like... I kind of almost want it as black and white. Like, this is cool. You can see the comparison here. This is the black and white.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then here's the painted version. Well, I feel like you lose so much in the painted version.
It also doesn't help that the coloring differs per, like, type of reading you have, too.
That's true.
Yeah, that's true, too.
Like, there's so much inconsistency in that sense.
Dude,
yeah, like, I'm pretty sure that my colors are different than the ones that... I would guess both of you have, honestly, with the way that these prints go. Mm-hmm.
I, like, love how these characters look. I just didn't see how they fit into the Miracle Man universe. I still don't fucking get it, like, no matter what, all these years. But maybe there's something I'm missing, or maybe something we'll be rereading soon to, like, explain some of that. But, well, yeah, I mean, what a trip. What an epic trip. This has been Miracle Man, Book 1, A Dream of Flying, and all the bonus content within it. I mean, do you guys have any other thoughts on, like, this in particular at the moment?
I think this first time read, or this chapter of Miracle Man in terms of, like, this whole book, I think this is probably the more digestible version of the character, because things kind of, like, amplify from here on out, so I feel like it's definitely a good read to check out, but, like, be prepared, like, if you're already kind of on edge of whether you're invested or not, it only ramps up from here. And so yeah,
I feel like this volume in particular, like, sets the stage for some things, like, kind of just getting his grip on what is going on. And then I do remember loving volume 2 the most out of everything. The Red King Syndrome, I remember just really fucking digging. But I don't know if it bled it. I mean, I love the origin stuff in this one. I love how it's just altered and changed, and he may have found a way to make a 50s hero into this. I love seeing the sci-fi attempts in here, but, like, I just don't understand how they fit into the bigger story. I wish it would have been, like, maybe its own separate thing all in all to not get too convoluted. But,
That's,
I mean...
That's probably why they're just, like, in the omnibus that they released, they just put them at the very end. Because, like, yep, they don't, like... If I were to read the omnibus straight through in the normal order, like, I wouldn't be reading these stories until I've read all of the main, like, Miracle Man all the way through book, like, books 1 through 3.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's probably a great point, too, because, I mean, the first one makes sense why we could read that short story, because you have to read this volume to get that story. But it would have fit at the very end after issue 15 or around there, you know?
Well, I would, though, because isn't this, like, the Yesterday's Gambit is, like, a future in the series that, like, didn't happen,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
like, that also would make sense to read, like, at the very end, because then you can be like, oh, okay, like, I see how this isn't, like, what really happened, mm-hmm, as opposed to, like, slotting in the middle or, like, at the beginning. Because, yeah, like, this is also at the very end in the hardcover, or in the omnibus.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah. And then there's just the bonus material after that, you know what I mean? So,
yeah.
But I am excited to say we have wrapped up book 1. We're going to be moving on to the Red King Syndrome now. We're going to be knocking out Miracle Man. This is the thing we're trying to just, like, kill off and say we did it and conquer our a series, you know? And the Red King Syndrome, I feel, is, like, the longest. I was just going through the individual issues. This stops on issue 3. The Red King Syndrome seems to go on between issue 4 to 9. And the series is only, like, 15 or 16 issues long, so this is the bulk of everything.
I think for me, this run is 13 issues.
Oh, what? Wow.
I think so, because that's before the Neil Gaiman stuff, I think. Or I don't know if that includes it.
No, it shouldn't. I mean, in the Eclipse printing of this run, there's 16, I think, total Alan Moore issues. And then Neil Gaiman's run is, like, a relaunch. Not a relaunch as in the, you know, totally relaunching it, but that's when his... Oh, no. I think Neil's continues the 17, 18, 19 numbering in single issues.
It does,
issues.
Yeah. It
yeah.
Does.
And then stuff happens. We'll talk about that once we get there. And now we just got the series back recently. So it's all fucked.
There's no it's winning with this shit.
But lots more to come. We have a lot of commentaries out right now. We have a lot of cool stuff. Check out all the announcements from what's going on with Apollo to what's going to be happening. And if you're going to San Diego Comic-Con, come find us there. If you're, you know, we're going to be doing a lot of crazy stuff in the next couple months. So be hyped, be ready. And boys, thanks for hanging.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, yeah.